Today's guest is Australian homeopath Neema Hermiston. Neema was originally a registered nurse, after which she studied naturopathy and then specialised in homeopathy. She has been president of the Australian Homeopathic Association in New South Wales, executive officer of the Australian Register of Homeopaths, and she's currently the president of the homeopathic charity The Aurum Project. She also holds a BSc honours from Middlesex University in London. Neema has a special interest in acute childhood illnesses so young children can avoid side effects of medications. Concern about the number of children with allergies, behavioral and learning disorders, and other chronic disease has led her to explore their potential causes. Her publications include Treat Your Child's Ear Infections Yourself and also Treat Your Child Yourself, a parent's guide for 100 common childhood conditions, and also her third book, Good News for People with Bad News, a collection of 41 stories of people from around the world who use different ways to recover from serious illness. She also runs a dynamic blog on a wide range of health issues called Treat Yourself. All of Neema's books can be purchased through karunahealthcare.com.au and karunapublishing.com.au. That's K-A-R-U-N-A healthcare.com.au. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the Homeopathy Hangout, where we discuss all things homeopathy from around the world. And now my mum and your host, Eugenie Kruger.
Hello, homies, and a very warm welcome to Homeopathy Hangout. Today, we get to hang out with Neema Hermiston from New South Wales, Australia. Welcome to the show, Neema.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
So lovely to have Australian homeopathic royalty on the show. And I'm very excited also to have your husband, John Gamble, on next week. Well, it'll be next week for our listeners, but it's going to be in 1 hour's time for me and you. But both of you, I consider Australian homeopathic royalty. So it's really a privilege to have you on the show.
Oh, well, that's very nice.
Neema, can you tell our listeners how you were first introduced to homeopathy? What's your journey been like and where did you start and what's it been like? How did homeopathy find you?
Okay. So I was compelled to study naturopathy way back when, in the 80s actually, and I was keenly interested in nutrition, and I decided to start a course in naturopathy in Sydney, and part of that course was homeopathy, and I fell in love with it, was absolutely awestruck by it. But I thought to myself, this is going to really complicate things because I want to be a naturopath, and if I get involved with homeopathy, then my life will never be the same again and there'll be no turning back. So I assiduously avoided it for a few years. And then I ended up succumbing. And because, to be honest, I found prescribing, and at that time, giving vitamin C to a patient was quite a radical act, and echinacea, and people really didn't know all the stuff that they know now. And so it really got a bit boring, to be honest, and I thought that homeopathy was just so much more interesting because it offers people something that they can't go to a health food store or the supermarket shelf or grow their own herbs, or, you know, they can't do that themselves unless they really know how to. And I just ultimately, the interest of the area just took me over, consumed me, and yes, my life hasn't been the same since.
And you also have a nursing background as well, right? Can you just tell us, how did you even find time for all of this? So you've got the nursing background, the naturopathy and the homeopathy.
Okay. So I trained as a nurse after leaving school, and I was a registered general nurse after 3.5 years training in New Zealand. And I was actually wanted to study medicine, so nursing was a bit of a poor second. So I did it very sort of part-time, and then I was working in London and then in another city, Nelson, in New Zealand. And I ended up working in intensive care and accident and emergency, and absolutely loved that. But that was pretty much the extent of my nursing background, in terms of I didn't specialize in any area other than enjoy working in acute care. And then when I started to study natural medicine, I put myself through the course by nursing. So I was doing part-time nursing as a temp type role. And I was on the nursing pool of a large hospital in Sydney. And then I just put myself through naturopathic college. And then I ended up working, having sort of a foot in both camps. I was working in Manly, which is a beach area of Sydney, at the Manly Waters Private Hospital. And they had a special environmental allergies clinic there. And they were looking for nursing staff. So that suited me perfectly because obviously I was deviating from the well-trodden path of nursing. And so it was a very good sort of meeting of the philosophy of what I was studying and moving on to naturopathy from there.
That's interesting. I did not know that you're from New Zealand originally.
Yeah.
And Nelson of all places. Oh my gosh, it's just the most beautiful little town. Hey, I haven't been there in like 20 years, but it really stole my heart.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At that clinic you were at in Manly, did they do allergy immunotherapy there?
Oh, that was way before they did that, all that kind of thing. What it was is it's a sealed off unit, absolutely hermetically sealed unit, because the people there were highly allergic or had chemical reactions to, like, I remember one farmer had a chemical spill and became hypersensitive to so many things. So these people were very easily triggered. So we had to be super clean, air filters. There were like two double doors so that there was an air trap so that none of the outside air would come in, that kind of thing.
So much we can do with homeopathy. Hey, I bet you wish that you were able to. This is where I just think.
Yeah, you know. What we did do then, sorry, was we did things like intravenous vitamin C infusions and elimination diets and probably some medications that I don't actually remember. And that was about it. Immunotherapy wasn't even kind of thought of then, as I remember.
The allergy immunotherapy always blows my mind how anybody can think it's okay to go and get these weekly injections for sometimes for years when we can do, you know, the same and better with homeopathy. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Well, it's better than medication. Like, people do get relief from their allergies. Yes, homeopathy is easier, but if it's like a profound anaphylactic type situation, even as a registered nurse, homeopath, naturopath with 30 years experience, I'm much happier for those patients to go to their doctor for immunotherapy, because the load is very heavy if you're treating someone like that, and it's quite stressful.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I think there are times when we have to say we're homeopaths, not doctors. And if they're doing well on that, that's better than being loaded up with, you know, a kilo of cortisone a week or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
And you are one of those very brave and rare souls that put your hand up to be on the AHA board as well. You're president of the Australian Homeopathic Association in New South Wales as well. And the Australian Register of Homeopaths. Anybody who, and they're also president of Aurum Project, and anybody who takes on these roles, you know, it's a voluntary role, as if we're not busy enough as a mum and a clinician, and then taking on these voluntary roles as well. I think it's a very special type of person that does that, because there's so much work involved in that.
Thank you.
And organizing the Bali conference 10 years ago, which, you know, I've been picking your brains.
Yes.
We're organizing one next year as well. So you're a very busy lady. Tell us about how you got involved with all of these roles.
I think it was because at the time, New South Wales branch of the Homeopathic Association here in Australia was going through a bit of financial difficulty, and I had just returned from overseas and I actually was moving towns, so I didn't actually have a set role. So I was writing health articles for the local newspaper to keep myself sort of interested in everything. And this possibility came up, you know, the president, who was the outgoing president, couldn't wait to get me on the committee. So it's nobody really wants to do that job. So when I put my hand up for it, it was wonderful. And I got a, you know, very good welcome and everything. And I had a lot of fresh ideas, and we got a well-known homeopath over, or it was actually already arranged. And so I had a big seminar to organize. It was exciting. I did it with Lindley Jordan, and we had a great time, and we got 300 people there and got out of the financial strife. So when that energy is there and you've got the, you do have the time, it's easy. And doing the Bali project was just a labor of love. It was busy, but I think when you really love doing something, it doesn't really seem like an effort. John did say he felt like an AHA widower at one stage. But yeah, and that was when I first learned to use a laptop and first learned to type. You know, that was back in like 20 years ago. And so it was stimulating and exciting. And I was lucky that I did have the time to put into it without sacrificing too much else.
That's amazing. I really hope we can get homeopathy to the point where these are all paid roles, because it's such hard work and people do give up a lot of their family time and personal time to, you know, for the greater good. Mm. But 300 people at an Australian conference, that's very impressive. Very impressive. That must be big milestones. Who was it that you had over? Are you allowed to say?
It was a big deal at the time. We had Paul Herskew come over from America.
Oh, amazing. He's been on the show. He's very knowledgeable.
Yes. So it was really exciting, and it really changed the game of, you know, the way the branch was functioning. So it was a real boost.
Now, you and John are both very prolific writers. You've written quite a few books in between all of this as well, and you have a passion for acute childhood illnesses as well. You mentioned about enjoying working in the emergency section at the hospital, hey, and the acute childhood things. You seem to really like being amongst all the action.
I do. Yes, I do.
Yeah. Tell us a bit about your books and your interests in acute childhood illnesses, and what is it that gets you excited about that, and why do you think it's important?
Well, any acute care I like, because to me, that's homeopathy is capable of great things, but the everyday, day-to-day function of homeopathy, of the medicines, of being able to say, oh, God, I think I'm getting tonsillitis, I need a remedy. This is the sort of information I believe should be commonplace, like you go to the cabinet for whatever medication you've got in there, you know, from the pharmacist. And it's entirely possible that that could be replaced with homeopathy. And I can't totally explain it, but it just suits me and my belief in homeopathy. And I think homeopathy has such an uphill battle to become acknowledged, even when things are going really well, is still the vast majority of the population doesn't really know what it is. And so to me, to promote the acute remedies for day-to-day, like if you've got a cold or even the minor things, you get a bruise, you have an injury, there's just so much that you can use. And once you get familiar, once a person gets familiar with those remedies, you think, why would I do anything else? And it's always there. It's at home. You don't have to make an appointment for the doctor. And I think that's a great goal for homeopathy to have, is for it to become more of a household product or a household habit that they use homeopathy. It's cheap. It's easy to use. It's safe. It's effective once you learn how to use it properly. So what happened with the first books that John and I actually wrote together was Treat Your Child Yourself. I've got a copy here, actually. And it's A Parent's Guide to Drug-Free Solutions for Common Complaints. And it's an A to Z guide, and it's got about 100 complaints in it. And it's been very popular. It's in its third edition now. And really, it got to the point where we didn't say to ourselves, we must write a book. It was like we really was saying the same thing to so many patients, try this, do that, etc. And I thought, oh, let's put it in a book and then we can just give people the book. And it really was a lovely surprise when people just loved it, the ones who learned about it, because it's Friday night, 7 o'clock, the child gets an earache or, you know, somebody gets a fever or whatever. It's usually the children that these things happen to. And they can go to the book. If they've got the remedies, there's a little kit that we recommend, and they can use it. And so people love being able to do that. And so we just decided, let's put everything we've learned in the last 20-odd years into this book in a simple way. And it is also not just to homeopathic remedies. We talk about, actually, let me have a little look, I'll remind myself. So it's got description of the problem and then what the common triggers are or what the underlying causes might be. Practical measures, like, you know, obviously if you've got a bleeding wound, you have to put a compression bandage on it to stop the bleeding, that kind of thing. And then there's some nutritional, for some complaints, would be nutritional strategies, supplements, especially for children with chronic ear infections. We have to sort of figure out what's causing those. And then if there's any herbal things, like we might suggest that. And then there's the list of homeopathic remedies, because not everyone with the book would necessarily have a kit, a homeopathic kit. So they've got something they can do. They've either got nutrition there, they can put a hot pack on the ear if they've got nothing else. They can sit the baby up and ask the toddler to swallow or blow their nose to clear their ears, that kind of thing. Mm. Very, very practical stuff, which, as you've already gathered, that's sort of the way I like to operate. So we put it together. When was it first published? Gosh, probably at least 10 years ago. And it's just been great, because what we say when we get parents coming, I say, oh, what do I do when this happens? I say, well, look, here's our book. Here's a few remedies. Try this and let us know if you get stuck. And invariably, it means that patients and parents need to contact us a lot less for acute problems. So that suits us, because they're usually in between type consultations and it can make you very busy. And parents love having this autonomy with their kids' treatment. They just love it. And one mother came in to the clinic a couple of weeks ago and she said, you have to tell everybody about this. It's just so important. There's so many people out there who need it. And I think, wow, I should just get her on my team and get her to do a podcast.
Yeah. Well, I have a copy of that book as well. I'm so annoyed I didn't bring it with me because it's in my clinic. So I have like some of my books here at home and there's some of them at the clinic, but I do have a copy there and I've got a couple of other
jobs. Is it the Is it the third edition or the second?
It's the same color as, I don't know if your colors.
This color? Yeah, that's the second color. Edition. So okay. There is an upgrade. There is an upgrade that I did a couple of years ago. And so, yeah, so it's like this growing body of knowledge as we find more things, we can include it more. But this, I think the third edition will last for a little while now. But yeah, so it's great to have it. It's a very enjoyable book to give to people because it makes them happy.
It's a good size as well because it's not an overwhelming read and it's very practical. It's got lots of really great information in there. You can quickly get to the information that you need. So I think you've struck a really good balance there between jam-packing it full of information but not overwhelming people, which is very important in this day and age, and especially if you already have a screaming toddler, you don't then want to read through pages and pages of information.
I had in mind a mother with a child screaming with ear pain at 3 o'clock in the morning. That was what was in my mind. It's like, what are they going to be able to focus on? And it's times like that, I think, that online is not really great. You know, online has got everything anyone needs to know if they can find it. But in a book from someone that they have established a relationship with and they know who they are, so there's a trust there, which is very important. And so, yeah, it works well.
It's extremely important, that trust. And as a parent, like I often say, I just don't know how parents who don't use homeopathy do parenting. I mean, or just how do you raise kids without homeopathy? It's such an empowering tool. I love that if my kids ever need a doctor, I won't hesitate taking them. But I love that there's so much that I can do at home myself. And especially, you know, post-COVID, where often it can be really hard to find an appointment with a doctor. They often can't see for ages. They often, if you go in, you know, they'll sit on the opposite side of the room. They won't even look at you or touch you or anything like that. And if you weren't sick before you went to the doctor's office, you're often very sick afterwards once you've been exposed to all the germs. And
there is that risk, yes. Yes.
So,
well, this is the thing, is that people do go to the doctors and there are a lot of consultations. You know, raising kids is tough and financial times are hard. And so there's a lot of stress with mums who may be working and need there to put their children in childcare. Their child gets sick. They can't afford to take a day off. So they go to the doctor because they know they're going to get antibiotics or some medication that's going to work instantly. Not to say that the remedies wouldn't, but the parents aren't necessarily in a state of mind where they can take that on board. It's a process. introduce, build up an understanding of it, and then finally you'll eventually get a kit or a book or read a bit about it and talk to friends about it, that kind of thing. That's more likely how it's going to happen. You've got a sick child, bang, you know, you can go to the doctor, get to medicine, and it's simple. You don't have to do anything yourself other than give the medicine to the child. So I think that's how they manage.
Yeah, I think so. But I always say any medication that you use, it's kind of like going to a loan shark because you end up like you might be out of the lurch for now, but you're going to have to pay that back plus interest. So you can't, you know, that steroid cream might get rid of your eczema for now, but you're going to be paying for it later on plus interest. Mm. So it might seem like a quick fix, but it's rare situations where that's the answer.
It is a quick fix, and sometimes that's what children need. But this is my bandwagon about children having medications, and I make absolutely no apologies for it, because first of all, children are sicker now than they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago. The amount of admissions to emergency departments with acute allergies is just skyrocketing. Ask any doctor or anyone who works in there will tell you that. And there's a lot of chronic diseases. I saw a little boy a few months ago with Crohn's disease, and he's 20. Well, actually, we were treating him from when he was about 12, and then he developed Crohn's disease. And you think, that's not right. And then you hear of the children that get leukemia, and I don't know. There is a lot of exposures to substances that children didn't used to be exposed to. And I think medications are a way of fixing the immediate problem. But children in particular can't take those medications without a risk of side effects. And one of the reasons for that is because most of the drugs, I can't say all, but until recently, no trials were done on children for safety and efficacy of medications. So what they do is they take the adult dose. Now, my maths is not fantastic, but if you've got a 10 kilogram child and they've got an adult dose for a medication, then they'll just make it 1/10 or 1/8, whatever it is, of the adult dose, and that's what the children gets per body weight. But there's truly no trials to say, verify that that's safe. And so we know that this is not helping children. I know that in Australia, the rate of prescriptions for antibiotics is like 4 times more than what a European doctor would prescribe. And the main reason children need antibiotics is for ear infections. That's the number one condition that is antibiotics prescribed to children for. And we know that the repeated antibiotics affect the gut function, which affects the immune function, which skews the immune response sometimes in vulnerable children. Other children it doesn't affect. It's not everyone. But that's the situation. So if you can give a homeopathic remedy for tonsillitis or acute ear pain or a soothing cream that isn't cortisone for their skin, skin problems are very tricky to treat in anyone's language, no matter what profession you belong to. So there is a risk. You can't in all honesty say this medication is safe for my child. And you don't know the results, the impact, because it might be after 6 courses of antibiotics plus pain medication, how that child's going to emerge from that.
Yeah, and there is so much information coming out these days about the gut microbiome and the effect that it has on our mental health.
Yes.
The gut-brain axis. And, you know, I was blown away when I heard that 80% of our serotonin is made in our gut, not in our brain. And then I heard a statistic recently that it's 90%. And then you wonder why there's all these people on antidepressants from such a young age. I had a 16-year-old, she's in Canada, a client of mine. I've only seen her once, and then the mum didn't bring her for the follow-up for 1.5 years later because she was very typical teenager. She just wasn't ready, you know, to go through the healing process yet. But when I saw her for a follow-up after 18 months, she had gone on to SSRIs, and she's 16. And that's very, very scary.
That is scary because there's a strong correlation, if I can just make a leap here, there's a strong correlation between women of childbearing age who take SSRIs even before they fall pregnant and the risk of autism. And so this is one of my pet beefs, I guess, is that quite often you'll see pregnant women on SSRIs, or they're pregnant, they on SSRIs when they become pregnant. And it really isn't safe. The research is all there, but we don't know the research. And I just actually stumbled on it when I was doing my science degree during COVID, and did the science degree that I'd always been meaning to do. And I was doing my major project at the end of the course was to create a design for a study on homeopathic medicine. So my study was, can homeopathy help mildly autistic children between the ages of 3 and 5, something like that. And so off I went, starting to do my big study. And obviously I was looking at, you know, hundreds and hundreds of research papers, and all these papers came up about risks, autism risk. And it was a major distraction and diversion. And it just blew my mind, because people think that nobody knows what the causes of autism are. But if you go onto PubMed, it's the screen light up, you know, if you know what you're looking for. And so it's, I don't understand why that is told to parents, because there might not be any definitive cause. I don't actually think there is one definitive cause, but there's enough information there to provide to medical personnel, natural therapies personnel. Even my colleagues don't know this. It's kind of brand new for me, because I'm presenting up at Brisbane at the conference on this topic. And the information is there to say, well, if you take a few of these supplements and you avoid doing these things or being exposed to this, it's going to be better for you. And then the medications are all tied into that as well. So it's kind of, when children get a chronic illness, whatever it is, it's, I think, rather than being a single cause, it's more like a death by a thousand cuts. You know, there's a bit of pollution here, and there's a medication there, and there's diets poor, and they've had a few courses of antibiotics, and on it goes.
And inherited susceptibility from the parents, and, you know, generational trauma and childhood vaccine schedules that have gone through the roof, and more of that being added, and stress, and, you know, the list just goes on. But the scary thing is just that doctors through the bank will tell their clients that SSRIs are safe during pregnancy. And this is from, you know, I have over 1,000 consultations per year for the past 4 years. And I would say of the woman that I see, when I ask them about the child, you know, their pregnancy with their child, and they will say they were on the antidepressants all throughout their pregnancy because they were told that it's safe by their doctor. This is what's being told. People are not being told to go and research or anything. They just get told it's safe during pregnancy. And then, you know, unless you go and dig yourself, you won't find another answer.
Well, there's a trusting relationship between the patient and practitioner, so they've got no reason to doubt what's being said. And if you have a look at the lawsuits in America, there's lawsuits now about this kind of thing, you know, about parents not being told what they would like to have been told earlier in the piece. And, you know, I mean, the rate of just ADHD is increasing at such a rate that schools, education systems, medical systems are really buckling under the strain of just dealing with the children, not to mention the impact on the families. So that's kind of a lot of what I'm looking at these days.
Yeah, our job's definitely very tricky. I think with doctors, I don't know how much time they spend on professional development outside of seeing patients all day, one after the other, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday type thing.
There are a lot of practitioners who are doing really, really good work, but their channels of information are different from ours. And also I wouldn't want to be a GP for all the world these days, because they have a really tough road to hoe. They have a very lopsided amount of paperwork compared to the patients they see. they're under a lot of constraints. You know, that like if a patient has a certain blood result, then they're obliged to prescribe this medication, that kind of thing. And I mean, during the pandemic, it was the bureaucrats that were deciding what patient treatment patients were getting.
Mm.
So the doctors were disempowered there, and that's how it was. So it is a very difficult position. So as a nurse, ex-nurse, although I do still have my registration, I do empathise a lot with doctors. I think that the vast majority are diligent and well-meaning, and it would be just so nice to have more of a two-way conversation, because we need them for sure. I will always, and in my books, I always say, if this doesn't happen or if that happens, go see your doctor right away, you know. And I absolutely respect what they do, and I love being able to go to my doctor and having whatever tests I might need. And I think it's great to be able to send your patients there and say, I think you should go and get a vitamin D test, because I don't know of a homeopathic remedy that's going to give a patient vitamin D. You know, there are some things that basic care that people need that might be causing their problem that's good to detect.
Mm-hmm.
And doctors are able to offer that. And in Australia, that's on the healthcare system, on Medicare. So we can order those tests, but they're costly for the patient. So I do think from natural therapists, if I can say this, that they do get a pretty hard time from natural therapists, doctors, so not always deserve it. I think they're doing a lot of good work and doing, you know, as well as they can.
Absolutely. And a lot of the time they can't actually say what they truly want to anyway, because they would lose their license if they did. So they definitely are between a rock and a hard place, that's for sure.
That's right. It's the rules are there. Mm. Yeah, just like they are for us too.
Yeah, absolutely. I just have to say, I have got a really good relationship with about half a dozen general practitioners here in Perth, and I'm so grateful to them, and I love sending my clients there and referrals back and forth, and I feel so lucky to have this beautiful relationship with them. I'm very grateful for that.
I would like to see more doctors looking and becoming integrative, because then they can do both. They can stop getting annoyed with us and find out what we actually do. And see their patients as usual, and then they will be busier than ever, because the integrative doctors are the busiest doctors that I know.
They really are, and often they can charge a really good fee as well, and, you know, they'll work a bit more on their own terms.
Mm. Yeah.
Naima, I would love to chat about your book, Treat Your Child's Ear Infections Yourself. So as somebody who badly suffered from ear infections as a child, which I believe was due to the DTP vaccination that I had as a baby, I had ear infection after ear infection. And interestingly, my unvaccinated children have never had an ear infection. Well, my daughter once had a sore ear, but I treated all homeopathics and she was fine, and my son never had.
Yes, there can be a family sort of thread that can run through there, but it's actually a book. It's a booklet. It literally sits in the palm of your hand. Mm. So it's this cute little one, and I don't know if I've got – it's on our website. And it's got the cutest little baby on the front cover with a pixie hat crying. And it's in detail what we do for children with ear infections. And it goes through, again, the simple measures, like what is it, what's happening. So you've got ear infection, but it could be acute ear pain after being in cold air. So that means that there's not actually an infection, but it will be if it's not treated. And, you know, we have a wonderful homeopathic remedy, Aconite, for that. And I've seen it work many times. It is like magic.
Mm-hmm.
And the trick with Aconite, of course, when you get, like, the child has been running around outside in the cold evening air usually, or on a cold windy day, and they come in with an earache. And if parents can go and have a look in that book and go, this is what's happened, and the outside of the ear can be bright red, and you give them some Aconite, it has to be given soon enough and often enough. And so they can see from looking at the book that they can give this remedy. And that's the goal of the book, is so that parents can take first steps. Obviously, if it progresses and nothing's working, then they need to go and get some professional help.
Oh, cute. Oh, that's gorgeous.
And, this is my hand. And look, the book is literally the size of my hand.
Oh.
It's the cutest little thing. And It's just designed, and it's deceptively simple. It looks like, oh, it's just a little book, but there's an ear infections overview and the chapters. Why is my child getting so many ear infections? And then there's a whole lot of reasons, like six reasons why that might happen. Stages of ear infections. So there's the first up ear pain that, like I mentioned, then ongoing, then eardrum rupture, hearing problems, glue ear and other symptoms. And nutrition, allergy testing, restoring gut function, that kind of thing. So it's a nice little compendium. It has got a bit of naturopathic stuff. I can't avoid that because I can't. Oh, and also a section on getting off the antibiotic treadmill. That's what the job that I find the most satisfying. So mother comes in and I'm saying my child's been on back-to-back antibiotics for 3 months because they're sick. When they get the ear infections, they're really sick. And so I go, okay, so I'm going to give you this remedy. And next time they get an ear infection, I want you to see if you can ride through it. And I'll be at the end of the phone and without getting the antibiotics. And I say, once you get, even if they've got a fever, as long as they're, you know, alert and everything, don't worry too much. And I would never do that. Send someone off without saying, I can talk you through it, because I've done it many times now. And I say, if you can tolerate your child having that fever because of the ear infection, just see what happens when they wake up in the morning, because the fever will burn out and they'll wake up bright and cheery. And the other thing is with ear infections, which I probably go into, it's been a while since I've looked at that ear infection book, that If a child has antibiotics for an ear infection, and it'll take like 48 hours for those antibiotics to kick in and start managing the infection. But invariably what happens is the child will improve before then. Mm. But what happens with the antibiotics is that it's a relief, because the parent knows that the child is safe and they can relax. The stress goes away. It's very stressful, especially if your child is screaming at night, you've got other young children, you're sleep deprived, you know. So if we homeopaths want to nurse parents through their child's first ear infection without going to the doctor, we have to be prepared to be on hand. So it is quite an undertaking, but the ones that I have done, and sometimes I'll say, I think you should go to a doctor, you know, we need to see them improve in a timely manner before we would be happy with keeping on with it. But yeah, that's what the booklet's for. So parents have got a go-to place. Call us if it all falls apart. I haven't got this medicine, whatever. And there's some really simple things they can do for ear pain too, you know, and infection. Like there's hydrogen peroxide you can put a drop of in the ear, 3%. There's a garlic clove. Or you can make a little bit of juice with garlic and put a drop of the garlic. You know, there's all sorts of things like that. An onion pack. And
I'm a you just huge put fan it on of the ear onion pack.
Yeah, the fumes from the onion have an antibiotic effect. Mm. And if you can find Maleen ear drops or Maleen herbal drops, you can put a drop in them. That's supposed to be fantastic. But we didn't use that because we couldn't get hold of it.
That onion over the ear really does help. I remember when my daughter had her one ear infection, she was probably about 2 years old. And so she was not happy about me putting this onion over her ear. And so I had to wait till she fell asleep. And I was just holding it over her ear while she was asleep. I'm a huge fan of that, alongside the homeopathics and, you know, the probiotics and all the other. Mm. Do you use much ear candling? I've just read such conflicting information about it.
Look, I don't know a lot about ear candling. And what I do know is that it doesn't help ear infections. It feels nice. And a lot of people say, oh, look what's coming out, but it's the wax from the candle. Yep. And I think it's a lovely idea. And like, it's the Hopi Indians that used to use that, was it?
I think so, yeah.
I can't remember. But as I said, I haven't used it therapeutically, but we did look at it in the days of the ear clinic and decided that, again, it's like if you've got something novel to do and you've got, I'm going to do this ear candling and I'm going to, you know, and the warmth might help, then it feels good because you're doing something, you know. But we didn't find it helpful.
Yeah.
But it's not to say that it wouldn't necessarily be for someone else.
And as somebody, like I said, who suffered from horrendous ear infections myself as a child, holy moly, it's so painful. And yeah, when we have something safe and effective, and you know, homeopathy works so quickly. When you find that right remedy for the ear infection, it can take that pain away in minutes. You know, the child will calm down and they'll actually end up falling asleep when you find the right remedy. It works even quicker than
I have a sometimes. Great story. I can remember in the ear clinic in Sydney, we had this child. Sometimes, you know, if you're seeing children, they can be noisy and everything. And this child was screaming with pain, hugging its mother, or, you know, clinging to its mother, and the mother was clinging it. And it was so loud that we couldn't speak. The screaming was so loud we couldn't conduct a conversation. So we got a bottle of chamomilla and we just drip fed this chamomilla to the child, probably every couple of minutes. I can't remember which potency. And by the end of the consultation, which was 30 minutes, that child was snoring.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be seen to be believed. It was just incredible. And that raises a point that one of the things that happens with acute homeopathy is people don't necessarily give the remedy often enough. You know, we were taught in my training that you give one dose and you wait a month. Well, I wouldn't think twice about giving a remedy every 5 minutes. And I would say that, you know, give Calimmune every 5 minutes until the pain goes away. And if you say give it every hour, that might not be enough. So rather than thinking that medicine doesn't work, you have to give it more often. So I'm pretty sure in the book we've got if the dosage frequencies, I hope I have. But anyway, we can give people a chart if not. So to get that amazing result, it does take a bit of practice. And that's why, as the practitioner, if you're going to introduce a parent or parents into homeopathy, you do have to be prepared to help them along until they find their feet.
Mm. Absolutely. And actually, I had made a little
that's
note.
That's what I found anyway.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because when we were talking about the child's ear infections book, you said soon enough and often enough. And I actually wrote that down here because I was going to circle back to that and get you to just explain that to our listeners, you know, the soon enough and the often enough.
Yes.
Because I do think that's one of the big downfalls that, you know, so often I'll hear people say, oh, I tried homeopathy, it didn't work. And then I'll ask them, how many doses did you give? And they'll say, oh, I gave a dose, there was no change. So that's actually my biggest frustration with a lot of people, that they just don't know how to acutely dose.
Well, that's why we did the book, so to really help, or the books, to really help parents with that. And this is the biggest thing. I had to learn it myself because I was trained to give much less remedy. But because I was involved in acute treatment quite a bit of the time, I found that, you know, you can't do any harm. I'll often say give it every 5 minutes for half an hour. If there's no change, then move on to this remedy. You do want to see a change. But, you know, it doesn't matter if they take it every minute. It really doesn't. And parents need to be shown how to do that, or someone who's new to homeopathy. So that is true that people say, oh, I tried that about a lot of things and I said, but it didn't work. And you think, well, what actually happened? And did you know how to use this thing properly, or, you know, that kind of thing? And so because people have this perception that because it's natural therapies, whether it's homeopathy or something else, that it's easy and they should be able to figure it out for themselves. And one of my pet beefs is people said, oh, they go into the supermarket or a health food store and they buy a product and they say, oh, I tried that but didn't work. And I say, well, what's the problem that you had? It can be the most amazing product, but if it's not designed to treat the condition that they have, and if they don't take it in enough doses for a certain period of time, it's not going to work for sure. So you often have a mismatch with the product, whether it's a homeopathic remedy or something else, and the complaint. And people think that, and it's just a common understanding that they think they can figure that out for themselves. And people like to go into a store and help themselves to get a recommendation because there's no consultation, it's cheaper. You know, so when someone says, I tried that and it didn't work, I like to find out the details of what it was and what it was for and that kind of thing. So there's much more to natural therapies than people realize.
It's definitely a pet peeve for me as well. And unfortunately, I see it's so often in Facebook groups where mums go to ask for advice. And then so often I'll see they'll say, oh, I tried homeopathy, it didn't work. And I always have to go in there, which remedy did you try? And how often did you try it? And you know, and I'll say, we have 8,000 remedies. So how many of them did you try? Because it's really easy for somebody who's new to homeopathy to then read these comments in Facebook groups of people saying, I tried homeopathy, it didn't work. And then they just blanket, you know, write off homeopathy and think homeopathy doesn't work. Mm. But it's, you know, it depends on the situation. What remedy did the person give? How often did they give it? What else was going on?
That's right. And people do need to be, this is where like a little first aid course online these days is easy. People do need to be taught how to use it. And it's like, it's very underestimated and that because it's just homeopathy and there's nothing in it really anyway. And it wouldn't matter if I took the whole bottle anyway. So how's it going to work? So there'll be like I'll give it to them, see what happens. So it's not applied properly. So as practitioners, we have the opportunity to say, okay, I'm going to prescribe this remedy for this problem, and this is how I'd like you to take it. If it doesn't work, let me know and we'll re-prescribe. It doesn't mean homeopathy doesn't work. It means that you haven't had the right remedy yet. And this, of course, happens in any medical practice. You know, you take a medication, it either works or it doesn't work. If it doesn't work, you go back to your doctor and get another prescription of something different. It's a very normal way of operating, and it's, how else can we do it? Because some people are easier to treat than others, or some conditions are easier to treat than others. So I think this is something that when people dismiss it, they would probably enjoy another opportunity to say, well, what if I showed you how to use it next time, or what situation? And this is where practitioners can do that. But actually, what I found when I was president of the Homeopathic Association is I did a survey because I was interested mostly in acute prescribing back then as well. And so I decided to do a survey of the practitioners in New South Wales, and the results came back that only 12% of the practitioners in New South Wales were interested, not practicing, but even interested in acute prescribing. So it's not very popular, even amongst homeopaths. That's why home guides are really good for people. There's so many around. We've written our own because that seemed like what we wanted to do, but there are lots around. And so that's why having a positive experience with a practitioner is really, really helpful. And I think that once that happens, and then someone's armed with a book and the most likely remedies or a kit that they're going to need, and with supervision to begin with, that's a much better start into the world of homeopathy than grabbing a combination remedy off a pharmacy shop and say, I tried it, didn't work. Because that's, you'd almost expect it not to work because they don't know how to use it.
Yeah, exactly. Naima, I have got a few of you and John's books, but I don't have good news for people with bad news. That one is available through your website as well?
Yes, it is.
Oh, cool. Can you tell our listeners a bit about that? Tell me a bit about that, because I'd love, it sounds like a great book.
Okay. So this is a deviation of my career, and I wanted to, we all know in natural therapies how people recover from things unexpectedly, from cancers, from terrible arthritis, et cetera, et cetera. And homeopathy is in there, but it's not the only thing that can help. And so what's really important is people select the treatment that they're happy with. And so I wanted to put together a whole bunch of stories of natural cures for serious diseases. And what actually happened was very interesting. What I discovered then is that there are actually quite a lot of medical therapies that are considered alternative but they're absolutely straight down the line medical therapies that were being successfully used. But if you go to your doctor, you probably wouldn't find out about it. So I ended up doing a mix of natural therapies and traditional medical therapies, medications. And I interviewed, it took me, I don't know, 2 or 3 years to put that book together, but I interviewed about 50 people and selected 41 of those interviews. And it was before Zoom. I was just on my little hand audio recorder. And people from 7 different countries or 6 different countries. And they told me their stories. And so I recorded the tapes and then wrote out their story and put it in this book. And I would have to say I was just bursting to do that. It was like I couldn't continue my life without doing this book. And I absolutely loved putting it together. And I'm not sure if the title was great because it does sound like it could be about a religious book, but it's a religion of natural therapies, I suppose. So I really, really enjoyed that. And there are 3 cases of recovered pancreatic cancer in it.
Wow.
There's 4 cases of autism, like severe. Well, 2 of them were very severe. The other 2 were siblings, actually, of the first one. Of their older brother and sister, who these were the tiger parents who would stop at nothing to get their children healthy again. And so this one little boy who, well, the story's there, you know, he was completely unmanageable, and screaming and, you know, terrible situation. And his mother was not someone who would take no for an answer. And she, what I call them, the tiger mothers, they just do everything. But it costs a lot of money to do that with autism. It costs hundreds of thousands of dollars, and not very few people have that capacity. So what else is in there? There's some Crohn's disease, people recovering from chronic inflammatory bowel disease using fecal transplants. Oh, I loved doing that. That was a real discovery, and I discovered things. And there's a story about a couple of stories about people who have reversed their rheumatoid arthritis and scleroderma, which is really a life-threatening disease. And what else is there? A lady with a liver cirrhosis, a hepatitis C.
There's some pretty serious conditions.
So I had the time of my life doing that.
There's some pretty serious conditions.
That's right. That's right. I'm just trying to think. There was one breast cancer case. So there's 41 stories altogether. Some people told me it was too long, but I had a good time, so I didn't really care if it was too long to read. It's the sort of book that you can read one story at a time, and that's what most people have said that they've done with it. And often people will have the book there and just pick it up. But the reason I did it is that I really wanted to show people how they could recover from their damning diagnosis without necessarily having to do exactly what the medical path was going to suggest. And some people do both, which I think is absolutely fine. Some people just went off on their own track. And what is absolutely true, what I discovered was this research from Stanford University that can't remember the professor's name, but he said there are 4 elements to a successful treatment. First of all, you have to know what's being treated, why the person has what they have, you know, and understand that. And the other one is that the person has to try to a whole lot of different things. Like they might try hyperbaric oxygen therapy or homeopathy or whatever, juicing. And, you know, one of those is going to help more than other things, because, and different people have different preferences of what sort of treatment they'd like to receive. And when you've got a damning diagnosis, I think that's absolutely, you know, fine. And so I wanted to write the book so that people could see that they can choose actually quite a range of different therapies just to treat one condition. The condition they have. And I think there are a couple of conditions there that both were cured, but using different types of therapies.
Mm.
And that was my thing. So I would have to say, I am a homeopath, but I've always had a wider view. And one of my colleagues called me a mixopath, you know. So I think that, yeah. So I like to use what's available and what the patient prefers. I don't need someone to use homeopathy if they come and see me. If that's like, I will say, look, I think this might help you, et cetera, whatever. And I'll go, no, I want to do this. You know, that's fine. And so, yes, it was a labor of love, and that did take a lot of time away from my family. And I remember we were moving house, and I was supposed to be packing boxes, and I thought, I don't want to pack boxes. I want to do this book. And so it was a very memorable time. But, yeah, so that book is around, and some people have found it really helpful to give them confidence that they can, it doesn't, you know, the world, the floor isn't going to fall out from under their feet if they don't do exactly what the doctor says, or if they don't do what their doctor says right away. You know, what I say to people is, well, take your time, you know, unless it really is urgent. There's usually time to consider what you'd like to do. And the other thing I often say is try the natural therapies as a first resort and a last resort, because the most difficult cases we see are people who have a chronic, awful disease, and they've tried everything, and they've had so much treatment their bodies can't tolerate anymore, and then they come to us and say, can you help us? And that is the most difficult situation. And so if it was the other way around, I think that would be better.
Yeah.
You know, because it would be easier for us to help them earlier in the stage of their illness. So,
absolutely. Now, Neema, where can people get all of your books?
Well, they're on our website, Karuna Healthcare, the word compassion in Sanskrit, KARUNA, healthcare, or one word, .com.au. And there's a little shop on there, and they can order them there. And if practitioners want to on-sell Treat Yourself books, our self-help books.
I was thinking that thing. I was going to email you straight after this to ask about a bulk discount. It's definitely a book that I want to keep in my clinic for my clients. We used to sell a few copies of Dana Ullman's book, Everybody's Guide to Natural Medicine. But I think I really like your one as well. And I'm just kicking myself, because I'm just thinking, why hadn't I thought of contacting you earlier to talk about a bulk discount to sell that in our clinic? Because exactly like you, I am passionate about my clients all needing a first aid book at home, because I'm, you know, I have a great Facebook group for Australian clients, and we give acute advice, myself and my team of four homeopaths. You know, usually somebody's on there all hours of the day and night, but I'm not on there every hour of the night. And I don't want somebody calling me at 2 a.m. for advice on their child's ear infection, because I need my sleep. And this is why they need to be empowered with a book and a really good kit. And then they can do so much of this.
They need to be set up properly. Yeah. Set up properly, definitely.
And you and John have your own publishing company. Sorry, you and John have
publishing company as well.
Yes.
Yes, we do. Yeah, so it's been fun setting up. John used to work in publishing. He used to be a legal publisher, and so it was second nature to him. So that was easy to do for us, and that's why producing the books have been probably easier for us than maybe other people, because he had that background. And yeah, so it's been a lot of fun. I love the writing, and I'm going to do a bit more. I've got a couple more books in me.
Oh, excellent.
But yeah.
And quick question for our international listeners, where can they purchase your books from? Because we actually, our biggest listenership is in America, followed by Australia and then the UK. So where can our international listeners get your books from?
Okay. So some of them are ebooks.
Okay.
And there is one book on irritable bowel syndrome that John wrote, which is on audiobook. Oh, no, sorry. Chronic fatigue syndrome, which is on audiobook. And I was going to do the other audiobooks this year, but haven't. And we're in the process as we speak of converting all of our books except the Good News book onto ebooks.
I have your IBS
book. They should be able to get Good News from Amazon.
Okay.
They're on Amazon.
Okay.
Wonderful. Yeah, the Audible book, the Chronic Fatigue Syndrome book, is on Audible on Amazon and all the other listening platforms. So there is actually a supplier in Holland that prints the books, and I'm pretty sure John's got a place in America where he gets the books printed and sent out to from within America. And if he hasn't, we can set it up.
Okay, so either way, people can just get in touch with you through your website, karunahealthcare.com.au. And
yes, if they contact us.
Amazing. Mm.
And until we get the ebooks on the website, we can actually, you know, manually send ebooks.
Amazing.
On request.
It was so lovely to have you on the show, Naima. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
I look forward to seeing you in November at the AHA conference, and I'm going to give you and John
a
big cuddle. I can't wait to meet you in person.
Yes, it'll be lovely to meet you, Jenny.
All the best. I'll chat with you very soon.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.